Can marriage survive parenting? Both parenting and marriage are really challenging relationships. Let's look at why, and then we'll look at what the challenges are of the combination of marriage and parenting, and then the good news, we will look at solutions. Beginning now with parenting. What's the problem with parenting? Well, if your child is only a few months old, maybe the biggest problem is that she spits up or cries too much, right? But as the years go on, parents notice that the problems get a little bit more complicated, not maybe so physically tiring as emotionally draining. Well, sure, not to be a sourpuss here, because parenting is a lot of fun. It's a lot of laughter and love-filled moments, and just, you know, it's the most precious gift that we can have in our lives, is the opportunity to raise a child. It's just, you know, that we don't have to really go on and explain why it's wonderful. But what a lot of people don't really talk about that much is the downside of this activity. Parenting is really stressful. By itself, this activity challenges us to the utmost. It's very difficult to raise a human being, and we're constantly faced with new challenges, problems that we never expected, never wanted, don't know how to deal with, and can be completely overwhelmed by. Parenting is difficult. Now, if you have a bunch of kids, it may not be difficult with all of them. Some of us have what we call an easy child, one that's self-raising, just perfect from the beginning. But it's hard to get like five of those in a row. And if you have a few children, usually some will be easier, some will be average, and one or two of them will be outright challenging. And that's if you're lucky, because you could have all five of them be really, really challenging, since they all inherit from the same gene pool and they're all living in approximately the same environment. It's not unusual to have a houseful of really challenging children. So, you know, this makes the process of day-by-day interaction sometimes painful, conflicted, tiring, stressful, annoying. You know, some children are just not cooperative. They're not eager to be pleasing you or doing what you say, what you want them to do, rather. And, you know, so they can be hard to live with. Or their activities can be frightening. They can be highly disturbing, sometimes shocking. And we may be thinking here, as the children are older, though it's not impossible for an 8-year-old to throw us into quite a tizzy, the 18-year-old is even more likely to do that sometimes, with activities that are surprising or objectionable or just outside our realm of experience. We don't even know what to do with them. So this is not at all unusual in raising a child for 20 years, that's raising one child for 20 years. It is not unusual for parents to find the experience of parenting very hard at times. Not all the time, not every minute, but at times. And there can be years in dealing with a particular child that just might push a parent to his or her limits. Limits of endurance, limits of patience, limits of knowledge, just limits of everything. Now, parenting as an activity is definitely not for the faint of heart, okay, because we cannot guarantee that every child in the family that we, you know, bring into this world will just be an easy, delightful, non-conflictual, whatever, wonderful experience. That's not necessarily how it's going to be. Keep in mind that people do have children with emotional disabilities and challenges, mental illness, that comes out maybe later in the teen years, depressions and anxieties and obsessive-compulsive disorders and all kinds of mean things like that. And then in the younger years, we see a lot of attention deficit and sometimes behaviors that are oppositional or, again, anxious or even bipolar in the young years now. We see all kinds of things. This is what parents are dealing with on the emotional level. And sometimes there are physical challenges, learning disabilities. Well, you know, I'm not going to go on and on. I'm just going to say that parenting can be hard. And then we have men and women who will approach the task differently. So if we look at the differences in their styles, men and women, first of all, any two people, even if they were the same gender, any two people are different in their thinking, in their priorities, and in their values to some extent. So here we have not just two different people, but two different, you know, species almost, the way a man thinks and feels and the way a woman thinks and feels are often worlds apart. There are generalities that we can say. For example, men as a group tend to be a little bit more rule-oriented and authority-oriented and respect-oriented, and women as a group tend to be more on the emotional side, more relationship-oriented. Now, we do see role reversal very, very frequently. So we say men as a group and women as a group. For some reason, what you don't tend to find is two people, man and woman, who are very, very similar. So even if the man is more like a typical woman, normally he'll be married to a woman who is more like a typical man, and, you know, vice versa all around, right? So you, what you often have in the house is these two different styles, even though it may not always be the man who has the man style and the woman who has the woman style. It's quite often reversed. But whoever has the man style, that authoritative, rule-oriented kind of approach to parenting, that person is often making the parenting error of being too hard-nosed, right? Just too hard sometimes on the children. And whoever has that emotional, relationship-oriented style often makes the error of being too soft, too permissive, not balanced in their approach to parenting. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. You can have a person who is authoritative yet not too hard and emotional but not too soft, but in that case, the people are actually working to balance themselves out, which is the ideal. If you have listened to previous lectures from this series, you'll know about the 80-20 rule or the 90-10 rule for teenagers, which says that each one of us, man and woman, has to balance out our ratio of love and authority in such a way that the love comes out of our mouths 8 out of 10 times for kids who are under 12 years of age, and 9 out of 10 times for kids who are over 12 years of age, not because we love teenagers more, but because the negative side of things affects them differently and more intensely. And the discipline side has a very small role in both age groups. It has a definite role, though. You cannot really raise children properly without setting boundaries and guidelines and enforcing them. So both the man and the woman in a relationship really have to work to become 80-20 in their interactions. So they have to overcome their natural natures. Now, in addition to the nature of a man and a woman, we have the fact that men and women don't always communicate well with each other. So here they are undertaking what we just described before as a really challenging project. Here they are sharing responsibility for this project of raising human beings together. And the two of them often don't understand each other. They don't speak the same language. They don't listen well to each other. They don't talk well to each other. So there's that challenge of the two different genders trying to carry out any task, let alone this most difficult of all tasks that we will ever encounter, the raising of a human being. And that now brings us to the challenges, the things that happen when you combine marriage with parenting. So what we have here often, because the couple does not necessarily see eye to eye on everything, is we may have different parenting goals. It could be in one family that a man wants his child to be tough and assertive, for example, and the woman wants that same child to be sensitive and a feeling and caring kind of human being. Now, they'll each work towards those goals, but just take, for example, a child who's having trouble with a friend in the schoolyard or something, and the child is having conflict there and the other one's being mean to him. Well, it's possible that the father could say, well, don't let him push you around. If he calls you names, call him a name back. Or if he pushes you down, then you shove him down. You know, that could be happening. While the mother's saying, now, you know, you have to learn to use your words, and you have to be nice, even if he's not nice, you know, because niceness is a value here, and just because he's poorly behaved doesn't mean you have to be poorly behaved. Now, that would be a very simple, mundane example of different parenting goals. There's a lot of more complex things that might happen than that one, but, you know, just imagine even that simple example that the child receives two different sets of messages. So that could be a challenge. And then we have different parenting styles. As we previously mentioned, there's the permissive style of parenting. Now, the permissive style is one in which boundaries are not really being set. So the child, perhaps, who has a bad temper and screams at his parent, the parent may be happy that the child is expressing herself, right? So the parent may not discourage that screaming because the child is now being authentic and being open and being a clear communicator and just being honest and all that stuff. Whereas the other parent may be a boundary setter, a more authoritative type of person who says, I don't care what you're wanting to communicate, you cannot communicate it in that loud, screaming, and disrespectful way. Then, you know, there's the authoritarian parent, which is even a more rule-oriented parent than authoritative. The three styles that have been researched in psychology are permissive, authoritarian, and authoritative, right? So the permissive one is the one that we just looked at that doesn't set boundaries. The authoritarian one sets boundaries very well, but has a cold and critical edge to it. It's the kind of person who frightens you, sort of intimidates you into behaving well. And then there's the authoritative parent, which is really touted as the preferred parenting style, somebody who is warm and loving, but who is able to set reasonable and fair, healthy boundaries. So, but, you know, in one marriage, we'll see people who have different parenting styles. And because of, you know, the moment-by-moment tension in a home where one child is pinching another under the table and something has to be done right now, we often have people just spontaneously expressing themselves as a parent, not really thinking things through necessarily and just speaking up quickly, you know. So somebody might say, stop pinching her right now, in a slightly irritated tone of voice. And another parent, let's say the other parent listening to that, can, you know, might feel upset that the first parent was using an unfriendly or harsh tone of voice to make that point. And that parent might become critical in their attempt to protect the child. They might say something like, there's no need to talk to her like that. You can just ask her to stop pinching him, you know. So that now there was a problem between the kids to begin with. And now there's a problem between the parents, as one parent pretty well picks on the other parent, doesn't support their parenting style, makes comments of a negative kind about the parenting style or a parenting intervention right in front of the children, and so on. So that can lead to a lot of conflict, of course, between mother and father, where now the one who was picked on gets all upset and hurt and you know, fights back a little bit about that and saying something like, well, you don't do anything at all. You just sit there and say nothing. I mean, I, you know, at least I'm trying to take care of it and I'm sick of this anyways. And, you know, it starts a whole big fight. And that can be a very unpleasant but quite common battleground that happens in the home where the parents just don't like each other's interventions and they say so. So, and sometimes there's a more intense version of this called triangulation, where a parent and a child team up pretty well against the other parent. So let's say it's the father and the son, just for example here, where mom says something like, it says to the child who's being rude to her, she might say, you can't speak to me like that. I won't have it, right? And the father comes and says, well, you speak to him like that all the time. What do you expect? And the now, again, this is that version of criticism, but in this particular scenario, I'm saying that the child and the father form one team and constantly diminish the role of the mother in that scenario. It could be the mother and the children constantly diminishing the role of the father, where that that is a constant going on, so that one parent actually feels robbed of stature, status, power as a parent, because the other one is either criticizing or mocking or undoing whatever the first parent did. This could happen even with discipline, for example, where one parent sets a consequence and the other one undoes that consequence or sneaks around with the child to undo that consequence, not necessarily in front of the parent, but your father said you can't use the computer. Well, you know, he's not going to be home later tonight, so you can use it in my room, you know, and I'll let you know if he walks in the door. We'll turn it off quickly. You know, like doing this sort of thing, not supporting each other's parenting interventions, not just by criticism, but actually undoing things like that. So basically, any form of lack of teamwork will be a huge problem in parenting, confusing for the children, and very unfortunate, unhappy, and just it can cause tremendous bitterness between the couple themselves. So when I say, can marriage survive parenting? Well, it's not easy, because there's so much that's going on. Parents feel more protective towards their children than they do towards each other. So what should we do about it? Well, first of all, the children thrive most when they see a strong bond between their parents. Children do not want their parents to be in conflict with each other, even if it means that the parents have to unite against the child. As long as they're not uniting in some horrible, you know, torturous way, the child prefers to see the parents getting along together, even if it means that the child himself will experience some kind of discipline or something. So, but the parents are often oversensitive to the so-called pain that each is causing the other. If you yell at your child, you often don't worry about the pain you're inflicting on your child, because you know that you love that child and you feel that that child knows about your love. So you don't think it sounds so horrible, although, you know, a little parenthesis here, I'll say that it actually isn't a good thing. But when you do it, and we all do make parenting mistakes, and we do sometimes use a tone of voice or choice of words that we know is not the best, but nonetheless, we forgive ourselves and expect the child to forgive us too, because we are secure that we love the child and the child knows that. Now, the other parent hearing it, to the other parent, it can sound horrible. Your voice that you just wrote off as, you know, not that important, can sound horrible to somebody listening, notably your spouse, who is very protective of the child. And the same thing when your spouse is using an unpleasant tone of voice with the child, it may sound horrible to you. Now, we need a definition of here of when must we actually intervene and protect innocent children from the horrible interventions of our spouse. And here is a guideline. When your spouse is abusive to the child, you need to intervene and protect the child. What does abusive mean? It means that your spouse is physically assaulting your child using a belt or an instrument that leaves bruises, red marks, or causes pain, and that would be considered unacceptable if your local family service agency were to interview you. They would consider that kind of intervention unacceptable. So this may not, you know, necessarily include a light tap on the hand, kind of thing. So nothing, you know, you could ask your family agency, your family services in your area, what kind of physical intervention is called assault and what kind is not kind called assault. And if it's not called assault by them, then you don't need to intervene with your child. Now, another kind of abusive behavior that your spouse might engage in is emotional or verbal abuse. Here are some examples. Your spouse locks your child out of the house on a cold, icy night or rainy night or something and doesn't let him in, where the child has no place to go and he's out on the back porch or something. That would be pretty abusive. Or your spouse deprives your child of basic necessities like food, clothing, water, or gives ridiculous punishments. Not that they're horrible deprivations, but just completely out of bounds, like depriving a child of candy for a year or no toys on, you know, for his birthday. Well, I don't know, forget that one for a second. I don't know if that depends. It depends on what the kid did, but we'll just say no toys for a year would be the same sort of thing, or just, you know, punishments without limit, right? Not permitting the child to visit with friends for, you know, 3 months, or humiliating a child in public by doing something which, again, your local family service agency would consider unacceptable. So let's say, I don't know if they would, you know, screaming at the child loudly in front of strangers, threatening him, you know, in public, or you know, even in private, I guess, hurling degrading, verbally abusive insults, like swearing at the child, again, in front of friends, guests, people. Now, there are some kinds of insults, because I don't want to be too loose here. I'm trying to say you do have to intervene at certain times, and you must not intervene at other times. So, you know, if a parent says something like, "You're not very bright," you know, to a child, that's not a good thing to say. But I'm not going to put it on the same plane as calling the child even a stupid idiot or something like that, which is a little bit more direct, and certainly not in the same plane as swearing at him. Now, calling the child any name is completely unacceptable. It's not a good parenting technique. It's not a healthy tool. But some of it may not necessarily have to be dealt with in the moment in front of the parent, in front of the child. Let's just say what is clearly not abuse or not a dangerous threat that a parent would have to intervene with. So I'll say that a spouse is not considered to be abusive or a dangerous threat if he or she engages in less than perfect parenting, because we all do that. So, you know, here's some examples of less than perfect parenting: raising a voice, using an unpleasant tone of voice, being too critical, sometimes giving a threat or a punishment that you don't agree with, you don't think it's the best intervention, the best way to handle a situation, or asking a child to do something that the child doesn't want to do, or being a bit sarcastic or otherwise cold, unpleasant, not warm, or giving the child some kind of food or toy or activity that you don't think the child should have. You don't think it's good for the child. For example, serving the child, you know, some sugary food or something that you think is bad for the child. Sometimes being too lenient, being not intervening when they should intervene, or showing insensitivity or lack of understanding or lack of good listening. Now, those are parenting errors. We all engage in parenting errors at various times. Parenting errors should be left in place as errors, and we don't run to correct the parent in front of the child. It's not a parenting emergency. That first category of abusive physical and emotional behaviors may be considered a parenting emergency, and you may have to risk the well-being of your marriage for the sake of the well-being of your child. But in normal homes, most of what's going on is just, like, not the greatest parenting, right? And that you can let rest until you and your spouse have a private moment in which you can discuss your preferred way of handling a various, you know, a given situation. Now, you don't want to discuss all the time your preferred way of handling a situation, because you want to let your spouse be a parent. It's better for your kids if you actually support your spouse. If they say things like, "Well, Daddy gives too harsh a punishment," then you can say things like, "Well, if you don't like the punishment that Daddy gives, then how about behaving? You know, like, why don't you do what he wants you to do instead of contradicting him?" You know, like, just because your spouse may give a punishment that you think isn't the best one doesn't mean that you have to criticize him even in private. Let your spouse be the parent that he or she wants to be, because they're going to do it anyways, okay? Now, if there's a big issue, what I mean they're going to do it anyways, I want to go back to that thought for a second. Some people will argue about their parenting techniques for the 20 years of raising one child and maybe the 40 years of raising a household of children. They'll just keep arguing about their parenting preferences, and all that does is erode the marriage. If you have something important to get across to your spouse, so prioritize, right? Pick out something important, but use good parenting techniques on your spouse the rest of the time. You can't be critical all the time. That's not a good parenting technique, and it's not a good spousing technique. So you want to be encouraging and supportive and understanding and listening, you know, towards your spouse. Let your spouse parent, right? But if there's something really important that you feel you need to address, you can do that on rare occasion. And if there's real parenting difficulties going on, then do consult an outsider who can give your spouse the kind of guidance that you will never be able to give your spouse. Because just like kids don't like to listen to their parents, but will listen to somebody else tell them something, spouses often don't like to listen to each other. They don't want to receive education from each other, but they will take it from their local rabbi or from their professional counselor or from the teacher at a parenting course that you both attend together. So you can, you know, settle your parenting differences outside of the home and with a third party in a much more pleasant and effective way more often than you can by just nattering away at each other. In addition to taking care of the parenting differences that way, you and be careful not to be, you know, critical to your spouse, and for sure not in front of the kids unless there's some dangerous situation going on. You want to take all efforts to keep the marriage also alive as a separate entity within your family. So that means having a date night the whole time that you're married, once a week. That is for you. If you can't get out of the house, you spend some quality time together at home, playing a game, talking to each other, doing something together, a project that you're undertaking together, or just, you know, get a babysitter and get out of there and nurture your relationship. Because, you know, the raising of the children is a project that the two of you do. You know, it's not instead of being married, right? It's something that you're doing together. And again, the children thrive when they see that you do care about each other, that you are nurturing your relationship, and that you care about each other enough to respect each other, to try and understand each other, to try and form a parenting team, to work on the project of raising them together. They want to see that. So that's the best thing for them. They don't really need your protection that much unless something dangerous is going on. So what they need to see is, how does a man respect a woman? How does a woman respect a man? How does a couple negotiate their differences and work out compromises and find solutions with each other? When you can show them that, you're doing a great job of parenting, plus you're doing a great job of preserving your marriage. So keep that marriage strong for your own sake and for the sake of your kids. And just have a happy time of a happy family life as you negotiate things together.